This is very reasonable take from the 650. Gents, the Niner coaching staff's been gutted since Saleh left.
Gutted.
I mean, how many defensive coordinators have they had under Kyle?
Well, D'Amico.
Yeah.
Saleh.
Mm-hmm. Wilkes. Sorensen.
Yeah, well.
Was Saleh the first one? Or did they have somebody before Saleh? I can't even remember.
Well, the bottom line is you got Bosa. You got Fred Warner. Now, I know Ward is, you know, him and Lenore are somewhat holding it down, but Hufanga, who all of a sudden, Steinie, now when he's not hurt, is kind of like,
Well, he's hurt now.
Yeah, but when he's not, he's like, get caught peeking and not in the right place. Just overly aggressive, but players make the coordinator, right?
Players make the coordinator, right? Yeah, I would say that's got something to do with it. All right, let's go out to the River Islands guest line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? Joining us right now, Ben Solak, NFL analyst at ESPN. You can also see him every other Thursday on the Mina Kimes Show. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt. Got to be on.
Yeah, let's start out with the 49ers offense and the fact that this team's 2-3 and it's kind of catching a lot of 49er fans by surprise. Are you noticing or have you noticed, let's say, any difference between their offense this year and what they've been doing traditionally under Kyle Shanahan?
Huge difference. It's very different, especially if you look at the time frame in which they had Christian McCaffrey, the middle of the 2022 season to now. We've talked a lot about what Kyle's good at, what his bread and butter is. Oh, under center, and they go play action, they get yards after the catch. And he's been evolving away from that for quite some time now. But even still, in the previous years, they were a pretty heavy yards after the catch team. At this point in the season, no quarterback has fewer yards after the catch than Brock Purdy does. Brock Purdy is also leading the league in what we call ADOT, average depth of target. When he throws the ball, he's throwing it further downfield than all other quarterbacks in the league. This has become a spread, drop back, and isolation passing offense. That's kind of that's how they're attacking teams right now. It is not dissimilar to the change that Sean McVay made when he had Matthew Stafford as quarterback. And he said, okay, we're going to go and gun a little bit more. We're just going to kind of get five in the concept, and we're going to expect our quarterback and our wide receivers to be able to beat their guys. And so there's been a big stylistic change in the way that this offense attacks the passing game, and there's been some really cool moments from that, and there's been some drawbacks to that as well.
Why do you think that is? Is it because Kyle maybe is trusting Brock Purdy more than he ever has, or is it out of necessity because McCaffrey hasn't been there?
I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other, right? I think that this was always an evolution that you wanted to be able to take as an offense. Kyle is so good at getting training wheels on an offense, but every single coach in the league wants to be able to trust their quarterback with a grown-up offense, with fewer and fewer training wheels. Then you can put those little bells and whistles back on, you know, pre-snap motion and play action when you need it, when you have a matchup you like, when the defense is weak to it. But it's nice to be versatile, be multiple, and be able to grow up and be that big boy offense when you need to be. So I think some of it is trusting Brock, and deservedly so. Brock's been excellent over the course of his career and is getting better and better week over week. But I do think that a big, big, big part of it is the absence of McCaffrey. McCaffrey was just the amount of stress that guy put on the defense just by being in the huddle, right? And you didn't know if they were going to come out with Kyle Juszczyk on eye formation and McCaffrey dot in the eye, and they're going to put Kittle in the formation, and Duane Jennings is going to block. We're going to be condensed, and we're going to run the ball, and we're going to be physical. And then the very next play with the same personnel, they could be in five wide, they could be in empty, and McCaffrey's motioning, and he's breaking off corners and linebackers on routes like that. That level of unpredictability is impossible to replicate with Jordan Mason back there, who just does not catch the football, run routes the way that McCaffrey does. That hurts Debo, right? Because now Debo's getting less targets behind line of scrimmage. Debo's getting less of the easy stuff because they're not screwing around with him in the backfield and McCaffrey out wide. That hurts Kittle because Kittle's not getting the same free releases on these little delayed, it's a running play and I'm going to leak out to the flat and run for 35 yards. You took a very critical piece out of that Jenga tower, and it's starting to shake a little bit. So I do think both explanations are valid. I lean a little bit heavier towards the McCaffrey side.
Wow, Ben, a lot of good stuff. I want to, if you don't mind, pick up right there because I've once called Kyle Shanahan in regard to play calling and design a genius. No McCaffrey, I get it, but I think Brock he's got a blank check waiting for him. But when you have a $30 million receiver in Brandon Ayuk, Kittle, who I feels like he needs to be featured more because he can catch, you got Debo, as you mentioned, and you got the emergence of Juwan Jennings and a baby Marshawn Lynch. People get mad at me, Ben, when I say that. Is that suffice for 9 for 22 being 30th in the red zone, Ben? Is it just, oh, there's no McCaffrey, that's why they're 9 for 22?
Yeah, you brought up the red zone numbers. The red zone numbers are the most important ones, where I think they really, really feel the absence of McCaffrey. Because red zone defense is a lot of like, all right, you know, we don't have to pack the zones deep downfield 20 yards, 30 yards down the field anymore. So we can really get 7 guys with eyes on the quarterback, 8 guys with eyes on the quarterback. They can all relate to one another. We can condense some of this space. And the solution for that for Kyle for the last year and a half was, okay, I'm going to throw the ball to McCaffrey or Debo early in the down, and I'm just going to expect them to break tackles on you. And we're going to be able to brute force this thing in with the running game, with the quick passing game. And with Mason back there, they're a little bit worse in those tight areas. He's not the same runner that McCaffrey was. He's a good player, but he's not as good in the tight spaces, making the right reads, kind of surviving through contact like Christian was. And then their pass game in the red zone is really, really rough at this time. They're a lot better at this stage scoring from explosives, scoring from further out than they are right now scoring when they get a little bit tighter in there. And so I think that the red zone deficiency is really where I'm looking at Kyle and being like, man, you have to come up with some more clever stuff, some more stuff that's going to catch teams by surprise, some more Debo out of the backfield, this, that, and the other thing. Because you got to be able to get 7 and not 3 in these instances. And obviously, they're coming off a bad Niners game. And, you know, the Mason fumble down there really sucks. And ball security inside the 10. Like, you don't want to overreact too much to this thing. But I really think the fact that they're at times struggling to punch it in when they start to get into the red, even the high red, it matters a lot because it's 7 instead of 3. And then it really matters when you got the kicker question. Sometimes that 3 isn't as certain as you'd like for that 3 to be. I mean, they're losing some edges there for sure.
Ben Solak joining us on 95.7 The Game. He's an NFL analyst on ESPN. You can see him every other Thursday on the Mina Kimes Show. I think I know your answer from the way you previously answered, but do you view, let's say, a red zone offense completely differently than you evaluate the offense outside the red zone? I struggle with, you know, I think teams that struggle in the red zone are probably teams that largely struggle outside the red zone and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But it sounds to me like you do make a distinction there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to think about it like a play sheet, right? Play sheet's got a lot of play calls for 1st and 10. Play sheet's got a lot of play calls for 3rd down. Play sheet's got a lot of play calls for red zone. Those are separate on the actual sheet. So we are dealing with different constraints that the defense is putting on us, right? I talked about in the red zone. Red zone, I don't have to, if I'm a deep safety, I don't have to worry about the 30-yard bomb going over my head because that's out the end line, right? You're in out of field, right? The geometry of the field changes, which means the style of plays that you can run change, right? Like the bread and butter Kyle Shanahan pass concept over the last 2 years has been running somebody down the seam or on the big post, then running that deep dig in behind it. And guess what you can't do in the red zone because you can't run that deep post, you can't run that seam, you can't clear out that safety. You can't run that bread and butter concept, right? So your red zone designs are inherently different. Now, they're going to be linked, right? Especially like in the running game, right? If I've shown the same different, you know, run looks and I'm from the same formation 3 or 4 times on a drive, all right, well, that matters when I get down to the red because now I can show that formation and maybe run a play action off it. Maybe I can do something, I'll wrinkle up what I did last week. Like, there's still going to be connective tissue. There always is, right? It's the same 11 players out there on offense, same 11 players out there on defense. You can get some guys. But yeah, the geometry of the field changes. And so I think the Niners are really successfully moving the ball between the 20s. And I think that, again, like the explosive pass has been a big scoring aspect for them. Juwan Jennings, Allen up against the Rams, 35-yard bomb, you know, Brandon Ayuk, big catch and run. Like, they've had their explosive pass scores. But when things are getting tight right now, they're really missing McCaffrey, both in the running game and in the design passing game. They should have some solutions. I think that you saw, you know, Kittle winning above the rim against the Cardinals that he had there, was it 2 weeks ago? Like, you have a tight end you can target. Like, there are some solutions there. I expect him to find it, but it's been herky jerky to start.
Yeah, and on the other side of the ball, Ben, I don't have to tell you, last year Steve Wilks, he lasted 1 year. When it was all said and done, I thought the defense performed well enough to win in the Super Bowl, and they were a top 5 defense. But this year under Nick Sorensen, Ben, I don't recognize this team. I know there's no Greenlaw, but can you share with us why the Arizona Cardinals and the Minnesota Vikings teams were you know, basically just running the ball down the Niners' throat. And there's Bosa, there's Warner out there, but share with us what you're seeing, and can this thing be fixed?
Yeah, so I was starting to be really worried about that Niners defense late down the stretch last year, even with Wilkes. And I thought they played a lot better in that Chiefs game than I anticipated. But I think you started to see some of those run defense issues pop up down the stretch. I remember talking about them coming into that Lions NFC Championship game. I thought Lions were going to win that game. And it was because over the last 5-10 weeks of the season, Niners have been like a bottom five run defense. And the reality is, man, it's hard to keep good personnel on the field in it whenever it gets expensive. Like that's the nature of things, right? When it's Robert Saleh and it's D'Amico Ryans out there, and Aziz Alshayer is your cheap third linebacker, and Jimmy Ward is still in his prime, right? And you got Kinlaw's coming off the bench here, and you have a deep cadre of edge rushers, right? You have so many guys on the margin who just help make things work for you as a defense. And okay, so our defense is good. We can bring that to the bank. Every single year, Niners defense is great. And then all of a sudden, over the course of a few years, you know, you've got to put a couple different safeties out there. Hufanga gets hurt. You know, a couple different corners out there. Okay, the linebacker depth isn't what it used to be. And all of a sudden, yeah, we still got Warner. And Warner's great. I mean, Warner's playing unbelievable ball this season. Nick's healthy right now. Nick looks excellent. We got Nick out there. You still have your stars. You have your tent poles. But a lot of the supporting cast just, it ain't what it used to be, right? And that's the cost of doing business. You got to go pay Trent. You got to go pay Ayuk. You got to go pay Debo. You got to go pay everybody from that offense. And you just start to lose in the margins a little bit on defense. I think the switch to Nick Sorensen was a lot of, you know, kind of going back to a defensive system that we're familiar with. We kind of know the strengths. We know the weaknesses of it. We feel like we can work around it. But the reality is that personnel-wise, like, they are so challenged, especially at safety and linebacker, some of the injuries they've had and some of the departures that they've had, that it's a lot tougher to survive in that system the way that they used to. And so, I don't know, especially now that Hargrave's out for the season, if I'm the opposing team and I'm looking at the Niners on a Sunday, I'm spending my whole Tuesday, my whole Wednesday just figuring out ways to run the football on them. So I really, really think that I can beat them that way for four quarters.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. We're talking to Ben Solak, NFL analyst at ESPN. Some really good stuff. Now, you said you would think about a way to run on the 49ers. I'm looking at the Seattle Seahawks, who they play tomorrow. Why the heck did Kenneth Walker only run 5 times Sunday?
Yeah, right now, Ryan Grubb, who's the OC there, came out of college system, right? He and Mike McDonald, they're pretty pass happy. The Seahawks lead the league right now in drop back rate over expectation, which means when we adjust for the scoreboard, right, the score deficit, when you adjust for down and distance, the Seahawks are calling more passes than any other team is in, like, kind of neutral scripts and neutral rate. I think that some of that is Grubb background, right? Some of the college approach, really thinking you can throw it on guys. I think some of that's because Geno's playing great. Like, Geno's just lights out so far to start the season. You're letting him control the game at the line of scrimmage, getting into calls that he likes, and you're trusting him to avoid the negative plays and go from there. With that said, they should be running the football more. They should have ran the football more against the Giants. I know that, you know, Dexter Lawrence is a very scary young man to run the football against, but still, you got to be able to establish it a little bit. And I think that you're going to see them try to run the football against the Niners as well. They're not great at getting additional bodies into block, right? They're kind of a very traditional 11 personnel team. They have DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jackson Smith and Jigba. All those guys are receivers. There's no Juwan Jennings on this team that wants to get in there and block, right? This is three true wideouts. And so they're a little limited on what they can do. I think they want to have more. They want to have the tight end set, but they had injuries, and now they're deeper.
Hey, Ben, yeah. Your connection tough, just got real funky. I wonder if we can get a better connection.
Hey,
nah, you're breaking up. Hopefully we'll reach out right away, because we want to keep you on for another minute or two, because
probably going through a tunnel.
Yeah. I like him.
I like him too, but what stood out to me, Steiny, is he saw something in this defense in week 10 of last year and thought the Lions could do what they did when I didn't. But, you know, you go to that halftime of that playoff game that they were able to come back. I was just going to throw it to him, Steiny, asking about Aaron Rodgers, but also, where's he at? Can they fix this as a collective? Because there's things going on both sides. The special teams is inadequate.
Yeah.
Defense is inadequate in the offense.
All right, let's head. We got Ben back. Okay, we got Ben returning.
Yeah.
Ben Solak, NFL analyst at NFL.
Everything.
All right, ESPN. Go ahead, Agu. Ask
No, yes, Ben, I was just telling my partner here, you know, it's kind of fascinating the signs you saw about the Niners' run defense last year and then that game at halftime, that prediction where you felt like Detroit would have won. If I would have called you at half, you'd have been like, man, I'm a prophet. With all that said and what, you know, what they're missing or what they're lacking, has that changed your views of this team and how far they can go as a whole? I know it's early, but I'm worried.
Yeah, I was you know, low on the Niners this preseason. I was kind of expecting this division to be a close one down the stretch. I'm still there. I think this is even before they lost McCaffrey, and I think since losing McCaffrey, you can see some of the holes in this offense. Here's the nature of things. It's the NFL. It's not for long. That's what the letters stand for. It is so hard to be good year over year. And Niners fans know this because Kyle's been excellent and the offense has been great, but they have these 8-8 years. They have their injury years where they go 4-12, right? Like, it's really consistent. It's really hard to go to the Super Bowl, lose, and then just be back at the top of the NFC the very next year. Like, the elite quarterbacks can do it, but if you don't have an elite guy, then it's just really challenging. You know, some cracks start to show in the facade a little bit. So for me, I think the Niners are a playoff team. I don't think they're an NFC powerhouse, and I think that the NFC is largely a mess right now. I don't know if anybody's an NFC powerhouse, so maybe they get hot, lay down the season, and make another run, but this isn't the same team that they were, I think, last year or a couple years ago. I think that you're starting to see just the attrition of trying to hold together one roster and pay everybody. You're starting to see that accumulate on them.
Wow, Ben, a lot of good stuff. Hey, if you don't mind, I got to be careful here. I want to ask you about the situation that went down in New York with Robert Saleh. And I'm not here to tell you Saleh is Bill Belichick, but Ben, I just feel like he got a raw deal. You're playing for first place this week. The defensive side of the ball is doing their thing. They're a top four defense. And for Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if you saw today, Ben, to come out on the Pat McAfee show and say he had nothing to do with the firing. Mm-hmm. Can you just run us through your thoughts on, you know, Saleh? And did he get a raw deal in Rodgers' part in this when he's not holding up his end of the bargain?
Yeah, Saul absolutely got a raw deal. He's a defensive head coach. The defense was doing great. Offense has been a problem for him. Now, listen, NFL is a results-driven league. You got to win ball games as a head coach. You don't win ball games, you're going to lose a job. That's the long and the short of it, right? And he was 20-36. Now, I think a lot of that wasn't his fault. I think a lot of that visibility has to go in general manager Joe Douglas. Like, there's absolutely a very good and easy case to be made that, you know, Robert Saleh was not top three on the list of problems in New York during his tenure there. You got to be able to win ball games, right? And ownership's going to come down on you if you get embarrassed in London, where Woody Johnson was previously the UK ambassador. Like, the chickens come home to roost a little bit. So I'm not surprised that Saleh got fired. I do think that he largely did what he promised he would do in New York. They were never able to figure out the quarterback position for a multitude of reasons and bad luck. And eventually, you know, the bill comes due. As to Rodgers part in it, Rodgers says, you know, I did not explicitly ask Robert Saleh to be fired. Ugh. I believe him. I don't think that he did. Sure, great. I do think that if he really wanted Robert Saleh to stay as his head coach, he had many opportunities to make that known. He had many opportunities to be vocal about that. And I don't think the firing would have happened. So even if it's a, you know, complicit in his silence sort of a thing, I absolutely think that Saleh is not getting fired unless Rodgers is to some degree okay with or willing to accept that. And so he's not blameless in this. He has too much power in that room, and we know he has too much power in that room for him to be, you know, 100% blameless the way that he kind of wants to be portrayed. That's that.
Hey, Ben, thank you so much
for joining us.
This is the first time you've ever come on with us, and we've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Mandel. Y'all take care.
Yes, sir. That's Ben Solak.